The latest measures come after a series of terror attacks that have killed a number of civilians. However, many Muslims believe there is a sense of collective punishment. France is home to the largest Muslim community in Europe, but issues over Islamophobia and racism have meant the large minority can struggle with social mobility. Such issues have been exacerbated by politicians. President Emmanuel Macron came under significant criticism when he described the religion of Islam as being in crisis across the world. Interior Minister Gerald Darmanin has also used language such as enemy within. The government have also thrown their weight behind blasphemous cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad, while cracking down on criticism of Zionist ideologies as anti-Semitic.
The unequal gap between America's rich and poor keeps widening at a record pace. Last month was the best November ever for stocks. Yet across Main Street, a once-in-a-century economic depression is being widely documented. While about half of U.S. retirees do rely on a 401k plan, which includes some stock ownership, the richest 10% of Americans own nearly 90% of all stocks. Since the start of the coronavirus lockdowns, the top 10 U.S. billionaires have now increased their wealth by 42%, or $127 billion. That eight-month increase is greater than the annual GDP of more than 130 nations. As much as the nation's ongoing police brutality problems or current presidential election confusion, economic inequality has been a major driver of this year's unprecedented political protest.
We had to fight for an eight-hour workday, and that involved people dying, violence in the street, for that to happen. And it happened here in Chicago, of all places. The history of unions have been fighting for working people, and not just the people who are in unions, but working people of all historical backgrounds. That means civil rights, that means women's movements, and that also means improving the quality of our lives on an economic basis.
Data this week from the Workers Union-linked Economic Policy Institute revealed that from 1979 to 2019, the income of the richest 0.1% has risen 345%. Over that same time period, the lower 90% of society has only seen a 26% increase, which is not close to covering the accumulated inflation. Since 1979, so-called trickle-down or neoliberal economics, which prioritizes corporations, slashes the role of government, and neuters the power of workers' unions, has completely dominated the nation's two-party system.
In the neoliberal era, you've had two parties that have been advocates of big business with a very different subtle change on like social ideas and how quickly they act on big business. You know, there might be the Democrats might be more subtle of their attacks on working people than the Republicans, but still there, right?
In 2019, the United States had the worst income inequality among not just all very developed nations, but across the entire West, excepting only Bulgaria. The economic catastrophe of 2020 will push the world's richest nation even further down that list. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
On December 2, 2016, the Federal High Court in Abuja handed down its ruling ordering the release of Sheikh Ibrahim Al-Zazaki and his wife Zinat. The court ruled that the arrest and detention of Sheikh Zazaki were illegal and unconstitutional, declaring that the rights of the Islamic cleric have been violated. Despite this historic ruling of the federal court, Sheikh Zazaki and his wife have remained in detention.
4 years of misrule, 4 years of disrespect to the Nigerian constitution, 4 years into tyranny, 4 years of tyranny, 4 years of disrespect to Nigerian law, 4 years of disregard to the Nigerian constitution, 4 years to a democracy without rule of law, 4 years to a democracy that has no respect whatsoever to courts in Nigeria.
In December 2015, following a traffic incident, Soldiers of the Nigerian army attacked Zazaki's home and worship center, killing over 340 of his supporters, setting the house ablaze and destroying his property. Three of his sons were among those killed during the attack. Despite several protests in Nigeria and abroad demanding for the release of Sheikh Al-Zazaki and his wife, the Nigerian government has kept a deaf ear. Instead, security operatives have continued to crack down on members of the Islamic movement in Nigeria, killing dozens and injuring and arresting many of them. So far, no one has been held responsible for the Zaria massacre, where hundreds were killed.
The panel did not accuse Sheikh Zazaki of anything, and the panel recommended that the people that invaded Malam's house, the Husseiniyah, the Darul Rahma, should be punished. But till date, most of them are being promoted. This is unfortunate at this century.
In addition to ordering for the release of Sheikh Zazaki and his wife Zinat, the Federal High Court also ordered the government to pay the sum of 25 million naira, about $66,000 each, to the Islamic cleric and his wife. So far, the Nigerian government has not implemented any of the order of the court. Danjum Abdullahi, Abuja.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is part of a speech delivered on September 21st, 2020 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, via video conference with participants in ceremonies throughout the country to honor the veterans of the Sacred Defense Era. The meeting was held on the occasion of 40th anniversary of the Sacred Defense.
They gave Saddam Mirage to bombard us, super ethundered for striking our ships, as well as giving him satellite information on the movement of our forces and the places where they stated. Their assistance to the Iraqis ranged from money to tanks, chemical weapons, and all sorts of other things. They even gave him chemical weapons, and Saddam used them against us. He also used them against his own nation. In Halabja, he used chemical weapons, and in our country too. He used them many times. In other words, the West and Europe violated and trampled upon all their philanthropic and human rights claims in their interaction with the Iraqis. They invalidated all their claims by defending the corrupt, dictatorial, and anti-human regime of Saddam. Having a deep understanding about these matters is very precious to us. We should really know who Westerners are, and we should decide, think, and work accordingly.
Your light and love, all I see. Nothing more I'd ever want or need, my Lord. Protect me from dishonor. Grant me faith to be stronger.
The last point that I want to raise is that a great incident occurred in the Sacred Defense Era. The fact that it revealed the capabilities and capacities of the Iranian nation to the whole world. In other words, it turned into a medium. All media in the world were against us. Global media were against the revolution. Of course, the same situation exists today. It was also the case at that time. In the beginning of the revolution, official media in the world either lied, denied our strong points, or slandered everyone, including Imam, the government of the Islamic Republic, the masses of the people, the judiciary branch, the armed forces, and everyone else. They worked continuously against them, and they wanted to portray the Iranian nation as bad people in the eyes of people all over the world.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah. Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah. Hi, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, sir.
Half a kilo of halim, please.
Hi, Kitty. Good morning.
Number one, hands up. Number two, hands on the waist.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Get ready for jogging to warm up.
Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
One loaf of well-baked bread, please.
In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing him. Terence fall low in awe of him. Faces are humbled in fear of him. And everything mighty yields to his mightiness. So to thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually, and methodically. And may his blessings be upon his messenger endlessly, and his salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then fail to keep for thee. I ask thee concerning the complaints of thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among thy servants, of a handmaid from among thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask thee, O he who owns all objects of need which are granted by his will and hastened to his desire, that thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that thou willst, and givest me mercy from thee. Forgiveness decreases thee not, and giving injuries thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from thee: the facility to obey thee at its beginning, and the favor of thy forgiveness at its end. O he who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
The debate.
Hello and welcome to Debate. I'm Marzeh Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, a wave of anti-Islamic sentiment seems to have hit France, being led by the government itself. French President Emmanuel Macron earlier this year said that Islam is in crisis and immediately started the process of implementing policies to control Muslims in that country. The latest move by the French government is shutting down an anti-Islamophobia group. Is Paris at war with Islam, or, as Macron has said, is it simply trying to control extremists?
France is stepping up its crackdown against Muslims across the country. Earlier this week, the Interior Minister announced the dissolution of an anti-Islamophobia group called Collective Against Islamophobia in France. The group is known as CCIF. The government has accused it of being engaged in activities that provoke hate and acts of terrorism. Prominent rights group Human Rights Watch has condemned the move as a threat to basic human rights. It said the measure risks further stigmatizing Muslims in France.
Whatever its intention, this measure risks further stigmatizing Muslims in France. Shutting down an organization that raises legitimate concerns about anti-Muslim prejudice is blaming the messenger rather than addressing existing discrimination.
Anti-Islamophobia group CCIF has rejected the French government's allegations and pledged to challenge its decision in court. France has launched a crackdown against Muslims after two terrorist attacks in October. One took place in Paris, where a teacher was beheaded after he showed insulting cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad under the excuse of free speech. Another attack took place in Nice, where three people were killed in a knife attack inside a Notre Dame basilica. Both attacks prompted reactions from President Emmanuel Macron's government, all of them targeting Muslims. The government said it would take measures against 76 mosques suspected of what it called separatism. It also threatened to shut down the mosques if necessary. Dozens of Muslims were deported as well. France is home to the largest Muslim population in Europe, and Islam is the second largest religion practiced in the country. Critics say Macron's government is exploiting the recent spate of violence to intensify its controversial anti-Muslim stance. They say such a stance will result in alienation and identity insecurity among Muslims and will fuel radicalization among communities.
I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. The head of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Mr. Masoud Shajareh, out of London, and activist and commentator, Mr. Mustafa Chareh, out of Paris. Thank you both for being with us. Let's start this off in Paris itself with Mustafa. Why do you think we're seeing a wave of what appears to be anti-Muslim actions being taken by Paris?
Well, I think there's nothing new here. We all know France for being very anti-Muslim. So this is just something repeating itself again, especially when the government is in a very bad position, when they face with lots of difficulties. So I think that this is what Macron is about to do here with this new law and asking for the dissolution of this organization, the CCIF. I think this is just going to put it into a loophole. So this is what it's about. If we look at it, we know that the term Islamophobia is very much criticized in France. So it is even denied that there is some form of racism against the Muslims. If Islamophobia does not exist, there's no reason to have an organization that is going to fight and protect the Muslims. So I think this is just something that we have to add, and that is going to conclude the policy line that the different governments have been taking in the last year or 40 years.
Okay, Masoud, some estimates say up to 6% of France's population is Muslim, and the birth rate amongst Muslim is much higher than the non-Muslim French population. Do you think that French leaders see this as being problematic, and do you think that some of these measures are being taken basically to try to control these numbers?
I think that's part of it, but I think it goes much beyond that. The reality is that in Europe and in the West, we are seeing rising fascism and nationalism, which is very dangerous. And the fact of the matter is, when politicians like Macron become unpopular and they need to depend more on this fascist vote, this racist, extreme right racist vote, then they start playing the Islamophobia card, as before people used to play the racist card. And this is really the reason. if we sort of remember, it wasn't the sort of that beheading and incident that resulted in sort of this crackdown. That crackdown started before. Macron starts sort of going for Muslims, saying that Islam is becoming unacceptable, it needs to be modernized, and he's the secularists want to sort of interfere in and define what the right Islam or wrong Islam is. And this is outrageous, but unfortunately, this is happening not just in France, but right across the spaces for Muslims to be able to articulate and defend their legitimate right is being shrinking by the day and by the hours. And what we're seeing in France is an indication of what is happening not just in France, but right across Europe. And it's very frightening.
What about that, Mustafa? I mean, the French God seems to be secularism. Is Paris trying to create basically secular Muslims only and sideline and perhaps control practicing Muslims?
I like saying that if you look at the UK, for example, or the United States, in the UK, you've got the Queen. It is a secular country, but the Queen is at the head of the Church of England. If you look at the United States, when you get elected as president, you've got to swear on the Bible. So it means that these countries, they have a different conception of what a secular society is. You've got freedom of religion. The French secularism we experience today is secularism has become the norm. So you have to be secular to be accepted. So of course, the French society and the government is trying to shape the Muslims. It's like we want Muslim without them being Muslims. So this is, and we all understand it when we understand the French society. It is a society in which you have assimilation and not integration. Assimilation means that you have to change yourself, get rid of what makes you different to be accepted. So which means that they want to have Muslims who are no longer Muslims. So this is what they want, now Muslims who are ready to change their names and so on. But this is part of the French DNA. It is something that we cannot change. Now, it's not a matter of color, being white, black, or North African, or from North African backgrounds. It is part of the French culture. It's part of the French DNA, which means that you will find black people thinking the same. You will find North Africans, Arabs, thinking the same. And this is why the fight is so difficult, because it's not just about the host community that we have to fight, but we also have to fight about against those who are. Who seem to be on our own side.
Okay.
So it's very complicated.
And very interesting. Masoud, what about that, what Mustafa has just taught, that basically, although France says is an open society, democratic society, free society, but basically, he didn't say that they don't really want religion, but specifically, they don't want Islam. They don't want practicing Muslims. There seems to be such a major paradox and contradiction in what the French say they believe in and what the reality is being practiced on the ground there, especially by the government itself. Your take?
Absolutely. I mean, this is really outrageous. They're using the skews of secularism and a special position of France to be Islamophobic, not religiophobic. You know, they don't go for the Jewish community, they don't go for the Christians and the nuns. You know, they specifically go for Muslims and actually become Islamophobic. This is what racism is all about. They talk about freedom of the speech being absolute, and, you know, so Muslims have to put up with abuses of cartoons and so forth and so on, but they are not free to use freedom of speech to speak out to the power in the form of, you know, these organizations like the CIF and others. So they need to be shut up because they're Muslim. So it's a double standard. This is exactly what Islamophobia is all about. This is what exactly what the rise of fascism is. And it has always manifested itself and justified itself. And I have to say that, you know, in Britain and United States, we've got the same thing. It's just nothing to do with swearing on the Bible or Queen being the head of the church. The reality is that Islamophobia is right. You know, only recently we had someone appointed for head of the equality unit in Britain who is Islamophobic. And, you know, it actually says she doesn't believe in Islamophobia existing. So really what we are seeing right across Europe and the West, there is an attempt to social engineer a new form of Islam and to promote that. And let us just remember the incidents, two incidents we were talking about in France, which was one of them was beheading. There were another two incidents, one shooting a priest, which happened to be a dispute, a family dispute, and the other one was extreme right, going out with a knife, shouting Allahu Akbar and attacking people, which was then shot by the police. But that did not start a vengeance against extreme right. The reality is that any incident is being used to undermine Muslims, and it's popular. You know, Macron is becoming more popular by being Islamophobic, and that is the cause of all this.
What about that, Mustafa? I mean, do you see the whole situation basically being ironic when France says that Islam is in crisis, when that country itself seems to be in total meltdown, with much of the French population saying they're not satisfied with their government, pointing out the economic inequity, government's poor performance with the pandemic, and growing police violence. But then Macron is talking about Islam being in crisis. How do you see it?
For this one, I'm going to say this one. 61 billion euros, this is the French debt. So just saying this, we know who is in crisis. How can you say a religion that is growing and growing all the time, decades after decades, how can you call this religion in crisis? You've got more people coming to Islam today than ever before. So I think Macron is in crisis because of the coronavirus and because the deficit of France. So this is, and of course, the easy target now is to try to find some kind of federation with the whole nation. And we know that Islamophobia is very, very strong in France. If you look at the French identity, it was forged in a way after the battle won by Charles Martel in 700 something. So this is when you have the first French identity. It is when this leader, war leader, defeated some Muslims. Okay, so this is why this idea is very, and this image is very often taken by the FN, the National Front in France. So I think it is more France that is in crisis. In crisis, why? In terms of population, there is this thing they call le grand remplacement, the big or the great replacement, with new generation of Muslims who were born in France from the third generation, okay, and practicing Islam. And also because of businesses, you've got lots of Muslim businesses, you've got a kind of middle class of Muslims that is maybe disturbing the establishments.
Masoud, how much does France's colonial past and colonial-like present play a role in the way that Paris views Muslims?
A lot. I mean, it is the psychological mindset of colonialists and the way that they behave and treat others and see others as sort of human to themselves. You know, these colonial powers, be it sort of France, Britain, or Austria, they actually see their Muslim citizens not as equal citizens, but they see them as a colonial subject. And they want to treat them as such. You know, they want to order them around. They want to give them no rights. And when they speak out, they, how dare they speak out? You know, in the name of freedom of the speech, the power is used to abuse the powerless, i.e. the Muslims. But then Muslims are not even allowed to sort of articulate their issues in the form that we are seeing now, or what is happening in Austria. The disease of Islamophobia and the use of it by the bankrupt politicians, it's something which is very dangerous and is being effectively used in the same way that the race card was being used and the othernization of a small group of people, which colonialism was using as the main sort of tool. Mm-hmm. So all these are at play, and we need to expose it. And unfortunately, I don't think France could resolve this problem internally. We need to take it internationally, because this is an international disease which is affecting all of us in Europe and in the West.
Okay, well, I'm going to get to that in a couple of minutes, but why would the French government, in your opinion, Mustafa, shut down this leading organization which fights Islamophobia, unless Paris actually wants to control those fighting against racism and against Muslims?
I think it is because of denial. It is clear now that France is a racist country. It is not just, I'm not talking here about the population, I mean here the institutions. So instead of facing the problem and trying to sort it out, sometimes in France we prefer to deny things. So this is why I come back on what I said first, that many people are contesting the term Islamophobia, saying that it does not exist. Look at the term racism or race. Race was taken from the French dictionary some few years ago. So how can you fight against something that does not exist?
Hmm.
So we are very strong when it comes in France. When I say we, because I live in France and I'm also a French citizen, we are very strong when it comes to deny things. And this is the reason why, this is the very reason why you have this law against the denial of the Holocaust. Because they know that in France we tend to deny things. The only thing that we cannot deny in France is the Holocaust. Why? Because France was guilty. Even if the General de Gaulle, the French, was the French president in the 60s, even if, because he was an excellent negotiator, even if he was able to pass France as a country that had won the war, we all know that France lost the war and France took part in the genocide of the Jews.
Well, Massoud, now many Muslims are saying, and you were talking about this a bit ago, saying the future for Muslims in France and in the West in general, they see it as more repression and a greater crackdown and attack on their Islamic identity. What do you think? I want to look at France, and then I want to look at other countries such as the UK or the US in general. Do you see that it's a level of deterioration in dealing with relations with Muslims in these countries or not?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Islamophobia is this century's racism and is very ripe. And, you know, biggest and the extreme right and those who want to sort of have a cultural wars and the sort of puritanism of white skin and so forth are involved in Islamophobia, because this is acceptable form of racism. It leads to other forms of racism eventually. And the fact of the matter is that now in most of the world, people don't deny that there is Islamophobia, but what they do as classical racism, they blame the victims. Of you know, they blame the Muslims. You know, Macron and likes of him. You know, they don't. I don't think they deny But what they say is actually is extremism within the Muslims, which is the cause of Islamophobia, and so we should shut down all the Islamic sort of centers and so forth as a means of combating Islamophobia. And I think that's the real key thing. The fact of the matter is that there is an attempt to socially engineer a new form of Islam, an Islam which is subservient to oppression and will not challenge, will not speak the truth to the power, and become subservient colonial subject. And that's what they want to do to us Muslims right across the West.
Well, what's key, Mustafa? What is key in your perspective to changing what seems to be becoming more and more a growing reality, and this attack on Muslims, and more Muslims actually, in certain cases, losing their Islamic identity to fit in, to get a job, to progress or succeed in these various countries? What's key to changing this around?
I think that the most important for the Muslims living in France is to get financial power, because it's very sad to speak like this, but it seems that the society we live in only understand the language of money. When you have money, they will keep quiet. So once the Muslim community in France will have a purchasing power, will have an economic power, I think things are going to be easier for us. Our votes are going to count. So this is what we have to do. Keep on working hard in terms of education, getting ourselves educated at university. Even university, you know, I work at university, but I know I'm in good university. I'm lucky for that. But I know in some universities that do not like people like me. Like myself. Why? Because my background is Muslim, because I did a PhD involving the Muslim community and all these things. So okay. We are targeted.
All right, let me give 30 seconds to Masoud. Same question. Your take, Masoud. What's key?
Well, I you know, the money and the power, it's useless if there is no self-confidence and confidence in ourselves and in our deen and our belief. We need to be a confident community to withhold this sort of abuses. This is, you know, one side of the abuse. Then on the other side, we've got all these home office or house Muslims who are, you know, trying to implement the same thing on behalf of their masters. We need to be confident to withstand these attacks on us and move forward. And I'm convinced that if we do that and if we stand up for justice for all of us, Muslim and non-Muslim in our society, we could actually come together and create a better life for all of us. But we need to fight back.
All right. Thanks so much, both of you, for being with us on this debate. The head of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Masoud Shajere, out of London, and activist and commentator Mustafa Chaira out of Paris. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing off for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
the limelight.
Nothing about the current COVID-19 explosion should come as a surprise. As the virus spread through summer and fall, experts repeatedly warned winter could be worse. They cautioned that a cold weather return to indoor socializing, particularly around the holidays, could turn a steady burn into a wildfire. Throw in a lame duck president, wildly differing approaches by the states, and a pervasive sense of quarantine fatigue, and a wildfire could easily become an inferno. Stay with us for an article written by Jamie DeCalm, a commentator and writer under the heading, "The US COVID-19 Outbreak is Worse Than It's Ever Been." Stay with us for more of Jamie DeCalm's article. The United States is now locked in a deadly cycle of setting, then shattering, records for new cases and hospitalizations. On 13th of November, staggering 177,224 people in the United States were diagnosed with COVID-19. As of 17th of November, more than 70,000 coronavirus patients were hospitalized nationwide. And unlike in earlier waves, which were fairly regionalized, the virus As of 17th of November, more than 70,000 coronavirus patients were hospitalized nationwide. And unlike in earlier waves, which were fairly regionalized, the virus was, as of 17th of November, spreading and fast in virtually every part of the United States, according to Johns Hopkins University data. This coast-to-coast surge is pushing hospitals across the country to the edge of catastrophe, their doctors and nurses exhausted, and their intensive care units running dangerously low on beds. Some cities are already playing out their dystopian worst-case scenarios. In El Paso, Texas, for example, the dead have been shunted to mobile morgues, partially staffed by the incarcerated. But the U.S. public has become terrifyingly good at ignoring those harsh realities. Almost 40% of respondents to a recent Ohio State University survey say they plan to gather with at least 10 people for the Thanksgiving holiday, even though in many areas this comes with a likelihood of sharing a table with an infectious person. Many people continue to dine at indoor restaurants and work out in gymnasiums because the authorities continue to let them. Almost 980,000 people passed through the U.S. airport security checkpoints on 15th of November, nearly quadrupling the number recorded 6 months earlier, when COVID-19 was nowhere near as widespread as it is today. That people are behaving this way at the most dangerous moment of the U.S. outbreak speaks volumes about human nature, which in the world of public health can be as dangerous as a variable as any pathogen. Rallying cries about flattening the curve have been replaced with a desire to return to normal life at all costs. Good news about promising COVID-19 vaccine candidates seems to be emboldening people in the wrong way. As Americans' reactions to the pandemic becomes increasingly divorced from the reality of it, public health officials may be facing their biggest challenge yet, forcing the American public to face how bad things still are and how much worse they can get. From a public health perspective, Thanksgiving was always going to be a problem. Maskless indoor gatherings in close quarters are perfect breeding grounds for the coronavirus, and many Thanksgiving celebrations will likely include older adults at high risk of severe COVID-19. After months of separation, it's natural that people are desperate to see loved ones and reclaim a sense of normality, but things are far from normal. More than half of the United States COVID-19 cases have been recorded since August, and the speed at which they're accumulating is ratcheting up. More than 1 million new cases were logged in just the week leading up to 17th of November. Nonetheless, people appear unwilling to take the kind of drastic measures that they did this spring, when lockdowns went into effect in many parts of the country and most people cut out socializing with anyone outside of their household. People may be inclined to travel because of a mistaken perception that the pandemic is better controlled now than it was earlier in the year. In mid-April, about 37% of the American public said they were very concerned they or someone they know would catch COVID-19. But on 17th of November, that number had dipped to less than 32%, despite the fact that case counts are now higher and more geographically diverse than they were back in April. A recent study found that people of all ages were more likely to partake in risky behaviors, like attending gatherings and seeing friends, as the pandemic drags on. In the meantime, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, has now authorized multiple drugs for treating COVID-19, and hospitals are reporting better survival rates among COVID-19 patients than they were this spring. But Dr. Megan Ranney, an emergency medicine physician from Brown University, says that could easily change if hospitals become overwhelmed, and many already are overwhelmed, and many more will be, as recently diagnosed patients get sicker in the coming weeks. Vaccines have also been a source of optimism lately. Pharmaceutical companies like Pfizer and Moderna each announced in November that their vaccine candidates are at least 90% effective at preventing COVID-19, setting off a flurry of positive headlines. But as of this writing, neither vaccine has yet been approved or granted emergency use authorization by the Food and Drug Administration, FDA. And even once they are, it will take months of doses to become available to most of the general public. According to Dr. William Moss, Executive Director of the International Vaccine Access Center at Johns Hopkins University, the promising vaccine news doesn't mean that we can go back to our pre-pandemic lifestyles. We're going to have to continue our social distancing and wearing face masks for the foreseeable future until we get really high coverage with a vaccine that's highly protective and reduces transmission of the virus. But individual choices around wearing face masks and social distancing only go so far. In times of crisis, people turn to their leader for support and guidance. And on that front, U.S. officials are failing the public. The Trump administration has done very little to counter rampant misinformation about the coronavirus pandemic and has made numerous incorrect statements about the virus's origin, about its spread and deadliness. Dr. Eric Topol, director of the Scripps Research Translational Institute, says the COVID-19 situation could be very different if they had a president and administration that were not going countercurrent to science and facts. From day one, Donald Trump and his team have basically not taken the coronavirus seriously. Now, with Donald Trump serving out the rest of his term as a lame duck president, the situation is particularly scary, Dr. Topol says. Trump has stopped attending White House coronavirus task force meetings and has said little about the current coronavirus surge gripping the country. State and local leaders have also been slow to re-implement lockdown measures that could help curb the virus's spread. Unlike in Europe, where some countries re-implemented restrictions of various levels in response to spiking case counts this autumn, many U.S. officials have been hesitant to snap regulations on reopened businesses.
Good morning.
Of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.